He writes about being in the National Gallery in London when something happened. A pair of eyes grabbed me from the other side of the room and wouldn't let me go. The eyes of an old man whose rumpled face glowed against a background of darkness. He gazed down at me from under hooded lids. At first glance, he seemed to be sad, almost melancholy. But then that first impression gave way to something else. I began to feel that his eyes conveyed a profound, even rigorous tenderness. Yes, rigor and kindness, all in the same gaze. A kindness toward himself for his condition, physical and psychological, but also, it seemed, for me, for anyone who cared to look. I don't think I have felt such unconditional regard from another person, painted or otherwise. There was rigor in his looking, too. It felt as if I had nowhere to hide from the honesty of his gaze. It was not that I felt scrutinized or challenged. It was that he was so fully present to the truth of his condition, so unapologetically who he was, that he summoned something of the same in me. Rembrandt, in this self-portrait, was hiding nothing, and I felt was encouraging me to do the same. "This is how I look," those eyes seemed to say. "This is who I am. No nips, no tucks." He was showing me who he was, and in so doing, he was showing me who I was. Resonance. Human being to human being. We are aging, we are dying, we are full of sorrow, full of feeling, full of life. We are beautiful, however we look. We are who we are. That's all. Words of writer Roger Housden from his study on Rembrandt. It sounds so simple. We are who we are. That's all. Housden calls that part of Rembrandt's wisdom, no doubt hard-earned wisdom. And it is part of the quest of artist Lydia Panis, who creates gripping photographic portraits, portraits that grip us the way Roger Housden was captured in the National Gallery in London by that portrait on the wall. Lydia Panis is an award-winning photographer with an international career who lives and works at her home in the Lehigh Valley. Her work has been featured in Time magazine and the New York Times magazine and many other distinguished publications. Her monograph, The Mark of Abel, was selected as one of the best coffee table books of 2012 by Robert Birnbaum in the Daily Beast. And her second book, Falling from Grace, was published in October of 2016. She has degrees from Boston College, the School of Visual Arts, and New York University, the International Center of Photography. She has received a Whitney Museum Independent Study Fellowship, and her work is represented in the collections of the Brooklyn Museum, the Museum of Fine Arts Houston, the Museum of Contemporary Photography Chicago, the Museum of Photographic Arts San Diego, the Allentown Art Museum, the Zhendai Museum of Modern Art in Shanghai, and many other institutions and private collections. Heatherson Cavage, director of the Sordoni Art Gallery at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, tells us, "I twice had the fortune of sitting for Lydia. She doesn't work the puppeteer strings to place you like a doll within her image. She creates a space to move, settle, and contemplate. You almost become this unconscious collaborator as Lydia watches from behind her camera. What Lydia photographs is beyond the superficial. It is sometimes wisdom, sometimes pain, sometimes curiosity, and always more than what meets the eye." The Sordoni Art Gallery is fortunate to share Panis's body of work after Sargent, inspired by the painting The Daughters of Edward Darley Bois by John Singer Sargent, that from the catalog of that exhibition, a show that runs now through March 3rd. Lydia Panis paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about her work and about how her way of seeing the world has formed and developed.
Since I was a child, I developed a very keen sense of vision because my parents were immigrants. And I was born in this country, but because my parents were living here temporarily to get their medical degrees. But by the time I was two, we had moved back to Greece. So I was born in a culture that my parents were very uncomfortable in. And then I was very quickly thrust into a new culture that I was uncomfortable in and didn't know anything about. And then by the time I was 5, we came back. So once again, I found myself in kindergarten, like around October, without the English language. So I think those experiences really changed me or at least turned me into someone who was very visual, who was always looking, watching and observing to see how I could fit in. And so I think that's what turned me into someone who needed really, I had this sort of desperate need to express myself.
And how did it first manifest then in your life?
Oh, I was a drawer. Yeah, I was a drawer. I drew and I painted all through high school. Art and English were my favorite classes. Those were the two, in fact, that the only two I even liked. And it wasn't until I went to in college I was a psychology major and literature. Again, my parents were not so keen on the whole art school idea. But after I graduated, I said to my dad, the thing is, I still want to do art. So how about I go back to art school and you pay for it? And in those days, actually, art school was quite inexpensive. And he's like, okay. I said, I'll do graphic design and I can get a real job. And while I was there, I had a professor who, he showed me or he taught me that I had something to say. And that's really what changed my life. But I have to say, I owe my whole career to him, because it was like the first time I felt like I actually had something to offer.
What did it do with the medium then?
I think it's a good question, because photography is just the medium I happen to be good at. I think, I think all artists are people like me on some level. They're like really, they really want to express themselves and feel like they've been seen. So it could have been writing, it could have been drawing, it could have been painting, it could have been dancing. I used to love to dance. It happened to be photography, because for some reason, when I'm looking at a subject in front of me, it's like my soul goes through that lens, through that person, and onto a piece of paper. And literally, I feel like when I look at one of my images, I see the way I see the world. It's literally like on a piece of paper. For some reason, it works for me with a camera. But I think it works the same way for different people with different mediums.
When you say it goes in and through and out onto the paper, it's not one way. There's an exchange, isn't there?
That's exactly right. I think my photography or my work, one of the most important pieces of it is the intent. Because I photograph actually to feel close. It's a way of getting close to people. I've always had this sort of need for intimacy. Like, intimacy is something that I crave, with people, understanding them understanding me, and feeling like there aren't any walls between us. It's a certain kind of intimacy that I feel like I can get through the camera that I actually can't get in real life. So I literally photograph someone, and in that process, as I work the whole thing out, as I work the shoot out, I'm watching, and they're watching me, and we're sort of... It's almost like meditative. It takes about an hour or something like that. But in that process, I come to see them in a way that I can't see them when I don't have the camera in front of me. And part of what I'm looking at is, I guess you can't really recognize something unless, you can't really see it unless you recognize it in yourself. And so what I'm really looking for in these images, I think what I ultimately see is me, and the parts of them that are me. There's this incredible feeling of wholeness when I photograph. In those moments, I feel more powerful and in control of my own life than I do in any other part of my life.
But what do they say to you then? Do people say that this is something that is unusual and they've not experienced such intimacy to this degree on many occasions?
People aren't quite that articulate with me. They don't go that deep. But what it does seem like is that they like being paid attention to. We all do. And I think what they feel in that process is my love and my complete and rapt attention to them. Because in that hour, or however long it takes for me to watch them, I'm watching and listening to everything. They're in my... in my zone, I'm focused on them. I'm not thinking about anything but them. It's this incredible, I mean, I call it a love fest. It certainly is from my end. When they leave, mostly what I hear is, I'm always like, hey, was that okay? You know, because I do periodically, you know, ask, like, are you okay? And they're like, yeah, I'm fine. Generally, what I hear afterwards is, wow, that was fun. It doesn't look fun to me because they're just sitting there without a smile on their face. But I very often hear that. I often hear that was really, someone said once to me, wow, it was like very cathartic. I think it's the attention that I pay.
And so it's a complexity that comes out on the paper, though. It's not all positive things that come, right?
No, because love isn't. Because love is so complicated. I think what it is they feel safe and I feel safe. And when I feel safe, all of me can come through. And it comes through in a way that's complex and yet also loving. So I think you're right. I mean, because what you see in here, it's not necessarily like, oh, sweet peaches and roses. It's not like that. Instead, it's the ability for me to feel all the complex and elusive and ambiguous feelings that a human being can feel about intimacy. And I think that they all somehow mix and merge, and, you know, mine and theirs and ours from different places and different times. And all of that seems to get thrown into the mix. And it's like some people have one, some people have another, but they're all complicated. And I think when you see all of my work as a whole, it's like we're looking at, it's almost like looking at everybody's secrets, my secrets, your secrets, our secrets. You know, and what I mean by secrets are our secret wishes, our fears, our hopes. And it's not like I could articulate somebody else's secrets. I mean, I certainly can't. I don't know them. But I can feel where we intersect. I can feel where we come together. I feel it. Like I when I'm looking at them, I think what I was telling you about having moved to this country as an immigrant and having become very much of like a visual sort of reader of people, I really had to kind of watch, mostly as a defensive kind of stance. I learned to have a really high radar. And all of that comes together, I think, in my photographs.
You just mentioned desires and fears, and you have written that you actually ask people about their fears. Is that so it comes a little bit more to the surface?
I ask them afterwards. They don't know anything about that when they come, because I don't want to influence the shoot at all. I want to leave that. I want them to come to me the way they come to me. I ask them mostly because it's an interesting question for me. These are the questions I ask myself. You know, it's just constantly, daily, it's like, you know, like, what is it that you're afraid of today? You know, deal with that. Like, anytime I have something I'm afraid of, I think, I became a teacher because I used to be petrified of public speaking. You know, this whole notion of exposing myself as an artist, it's all mixed up with, like, there is a desire to expose myself, like, to express myself, but there's also this piece that's very afraid of being exposed. And I think all those contradictions, again, are in there, in the work.
Have there been shifts in terms of what people might be revealing over the extent of your career, or in a time when people seem to be very fearful? Have there been external shifts societally that you have ever noticed?
No, I'm more, I guess, I suppose, looking at and seeing what's underneath. It's really, for me, my work is political in the sense that it's very personal, that the personal will always become political. I mean, how you feel about the world, how you feel about yourself will always come through in how you treat the world. And so I really do concentrate on like what I think are these kind of unconscious, ambiguous, elusive, slippery ways that our minds kind of like work themselves, you know, how things work themselves through our minds in a way, you know, all the things that we kind of gather as children, you know, like all the moves I had as a child, all the different fears and, you know, things that I felt. I think all of that stuff has somehow manifested itself into the person who I am today, with the confidence that I have, with the strengths that I have, but also with the vulnerabilities and the fears. And I mean, I think everyone has them. We just have them all in different kinds of ways. But I sort of feel like my work on some level elucidates how we're all both vulnerable and strong. We all, you know, hope and we all fear. And as human beings, we're very, very complicated. And really, ultimately, if we look at those vulnerabilities that we have, we can really learn a lot from them and we can actually be stronger by looking at them. I mean, I think that's kind of the way I live. I try.
How do you work then? Do you come across someone and say, will you come to my studio and would you let me take your picture?
First of all, my work is all about relationships and home. Relationships, family, home, trust, loss, longing, love. So I work at home. All of my photographs are made on my property or in my studio. And you know, I've tried working elsewhere. And what happens when I work elsewhere is I'm not bringing the same stuff to it. I think all that, I mean, I don't want to exaggerate this by calling it trauma, but that disruption that I had in my early life really did throw me. I mean, I am a big traveler to this day still. But I have to tell you, when I am away from home, I am always just a little discombobulated. When I travel somewhere, you know, I know that I'm going to have a moment where I feel a little bit of crisis, where I'm feeling a little like out of my own element and out of my own control. So anyways, all my photographs are done at home. So partially that has to do with family and how we become who we are. Like love and relationships are all started, you know, as children. We learn how to love from the house, from our homes, you know, from our families. And that's part of what I bring to my work. Now, who do I photograph? They're always people I know in some way. Like this young lady is a student of mine. They're either students, a lot of them are students, friends, the children of friends, my own children's friends. Then usually, I mean, most of them don't wear outfits like this. Most of them wear regular clothes. The two people in this show who are wearing kind of like gowns, it was more that they actually offered that to me.
Well, that takes us naturally to the show. You're working with portraits, and that's a long tradition before photography even began in the world of art. And we think about the great and deeply complex portraits of someone like a Rembrandt. There's this working with a medium and a soul quality that comes through. So what you do is in a tradition where those questions have been asked by artists, or artists have put themselves in vulnerable positions. So this show is after connected with an artist, a painter, after Sargent. How did that juncture come together for you then?
Yeah, in fact, I feel like my work is much more related to the history of painting and the history of literature, rather, for instance, than photography, because photography does seem more like a document, and I don't see my photographs as documents at all. In fact, they're not even necessarily real portraits of these people. They are in the sense that I'm looking and I'm being very honest, and I'm certainly not making anything up. But if you ask me, these are, I could call them self-portraits. And so when you mention Rembrandt, for instance, I have a series called Falling from Grace, which is very much based on how Rembrandt worked and the timelessness and like the universal aspects of his painting. After Sargent, then, is an interesting story. I had just finished reading, there's a book called Sargent's Daughters by Erica Hirschler, who's a curator up at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. And it's a book on the painting of the daughters of Edward Darley Bois. And I mean, the painting is, I mean, it's incredible, you know. It's disturbing, it's mysterious, it's enigmatic, and it's a painting of four young sisters in this foyer with all this space around them, this kind of dark space that's very mysterious, and yeah, it's disturbing. And the fact that someone could write an entire book on a painting really speaks to the complexity and really the greatness of the painting. And what it talks a little bit about is how these girls, they had this very glamorous socialite mother. And these four girls, like, ended up, there was a lot of depression later on. All of that is a little nebulous exactly what happened. But they were very different. Put it this way, they grew up very differently than their mother. So I went up to Boston to see the painting because I was just so fascinated by the story. And there's like these two rooms of Sargent paintings at the museum in Boston. And as much as I've always liked Sargent, I didn't realize until I saw these rooms together how incredibly connected this male painter in the late 1800s was to these women. You know, rich socialite type women. And he had this incredible empathy for both their strengths and their masks, and yet also their humanness and their vulnerability. I was really moved by how, first of all, how prescient he was about these little girls, because how could he ever know? And yet he felt something. And by how really empathetic he was, the kind of empathy and compassion and sincerity he had while looking at these women who clearly, you know, were all dressed up in these fabulous dresses. You'd think he could have painted them a different way, and yet he really showed us their humanity. And I was on the brink of starting a new series. And I was so influenced. I just was so pleased and so moved by him. And I thought, you know, I kind of work in that vein. And that's why I called it After Sargent. So my photographs don't look like Sargent's work, but they're based on his sort of psychological empathy for his subjects. And what I like to do, I like to work where, like, I do a series, and then for the next series, I want to challenge myself. So I either, like, I go outside versus inside, or I change format cameras. And I had just finished working inside the studio with a single person with a very different kind of lighting situation. So I went outside. And although some of these look like they're studio portraits, they're not. They're all outside. But I was mixing and matching some of my outside themes to some of my inside themes. It's just visual kind of compositional things. And I was basically experimenting with, you know, the idea behind me of just that, you know, Sargent had so much empathy for these women. And it was just really in the back of my mind. Yes. You know? It's really just a place to start.
But again, it shows that not only are you always asking the profound questions about who we are and how we interact and what relationships mean and all of those things, but you're willing to grow and go out there on that edge and not know.
Actually, that's the most interesting part about the work, I think. That for me, anyway, it's like, if I know what I know when I'm finished with the series, because it's, I kind of know what's going to come out of it. If I take a photograph and I think, oh my gosh, that was so easy and it wasn't scary at all for me, then I know I'm finished, because it really is so much. I mean, yeah, I'm interested in who we are and why we are. And, you know, I learn a lot about people by photographing them. But as I was saying something to someone this morning, I learn more about me than anything when I do this work. It's all about showing me, like, who I am. And I think the more we understand ourselves, the more we understand the world, and the more empathy and compassion we have for others. I think making art is this amazing thing, because you basically wake up every morning and you know that your goal is to learn something about yourself. Not in a self-centered way, in a way that's both critical and frightening. And so I approach every photo shoot with, like, all this trepidation. I'm always, if you can imagine, after 30 years, I'm still afraid every time I pull a camera out, every time I have an appointment with someone. I'm like, what if I don't see anything? What if I disappoint them? What if I disappoint me? What if it doesn't work? What if, like, we don't connect? Which is the biggest thing for me. Like, this notion of connecting, that's the intent. You know, it's like to come together. And that's scary, because you never know if it's going to work. But that's also the most exciting part of it. There's also this sense that they're also just standing there. They're really not doing anything. And so when you look at my photographs, you're looking at people, you're not only looking at them, but there is this really strong sense that they're looking at you. Like, I think the audience is just as vulnerable. Rather than just the person who's looking in, there is this odd sense in my work that we are just as vulnerable as the people in the pictures. That's I think, one of the most unusual parts of my work. And that's because, as the photographer, even though I am the one with the power, I cede some of that power. In my brain, I cede some of that power to my viewer.
That not only can make this touch us, but it can also make us a little squirmy.
I think that's exactly what makes us squirmy. That, you know, we're not just looking at them, but they're looking at us. Yeah, and so you're not real clear. I think when you look at my photographs, a lot of times it's not real clear who's in charge.
You said photography is what you're good at, and all the technical things that you have to get right. Say you have a new series that you might be working on. Will you adjust? Will you get a new lens to execute your projects that will do the best job, or are you content with what you have?
I do nothing. I do nothing. I have the same camera I've had for 25 years, both of them. I have the basic lens for a medium format camera. I have the basic lens for a large format camera. I do what I can with what I have. I've always been someone who doesn't go fancy. I work with the most minimal equipment ever. I might do a better job if I had more better equipment, but I just have no interest in equipment, like none. Students come to me always, well, which camera you think I should get? And I always say, it doesn't matter. I don't care what camera you have. It's all you. It doesn't make any difference. I seriously work with the most basic camera ever and like general lenses. But I think that rather than make things more complicated for me, what they do is allow me to slow down. Because I am I can be very animated and, you know, high energy. This equipment actually slows me down and lets me look more slowly. And I think also makes them kind of slow down too.
We know beauty and terror are often used together. Do you ever think about beauty as an artist?
Yeah, beauty for me is honesty. It's reality. It's looking at things clearly. I think being able to see clearly without a foggy lens is the most beautiful thing. That's reality. It's being able to see the world as it is. That's beauty for me. I have a series I'm doing now called Holding On, and I'm asking people to bring people that they're holding on to. And I ask them afterwards, the question is, what is love like to you? And some of the things they say, and I just brought a couple here. Like here's someone said to me, I think love is wanting to take the time and energy to really try to understand a person, their beliefs, their values, their interests, their quirks, their flaws, their darkest fears, their greatest insecurities, their wildest dreams. Because love is everything, really. It's about loving yourself. It's about loving someone else. It's about being able to be whole. I think that's what I try to do. I mean, I try to be whole through my work. I think as artists, that's what we do. Oh, and we're always somehow caught. I think the tension is that catch that everybody has of wanting to express yourself, but being afraid of being exposed. That vulnerable place where you're exposed and you're vulnerable.
As scary as it is to be open and vulnerable, it also allows us to be somewhat more human. And you, as an artist, are doing it in a way that you can help give us a safe experience of this so that we might risk it outside the gallery, for example.
Yeah, that is the goal. It's to teach us about ourselves, and not in a didactic way and not in any kind of conclusive way, but just that, you know, I look at myself and I make myself vulnerable. And so when you look at my photographs, that I hope that that's what you would do too. You would look at them and try to understand where, you know, you're coming from in relationship to this. That's what I think. That's the interesting thing about my work. I think one of the interesting things, it's very active. I think it sort of eggs the viewer on. And that's why I think sometimes people are like, oh, it's very uncomfortable to look at these pictures. It is, you know, it can be, because I'm dredging up all that stuff that churns around that we are afraid to look at.
And the different series gives us different entryways into that, right?
Yep, each series is a little different way, exactly, of a different kind, different attitude towards love, towards relationships, towards intimacy, trust, longing, desire, loss. It's the relationship between all of them and between the viewer and between the maker. It's the whole thing coming together. I think that's what happens in that hour where I shoot. I feel, they feel. We don't really know what it is. It's not about the conversation. It's about just being there and feeling, allowing ourselves to just be who we are.
Award-winning artist Lydia Panas speaking with us about her photographic work in connection with the show After Sargent at the Sordoni Art Gallery at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, now through March 3rd. For more information on the web, wilkes.edu, wilkes.edu. That's Lydia Panas, P-A-N-A-S, speaking with us about her work in connection with the show After Sargent, that is running now at the Sordoni Art Gallery at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre through March 3rd. For more information on the web, wilkes.edu, wilkes.edu, there is a catalog that accompanies the show.